TheFreeTurkey.com today.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
We come back with Scott and Suzanne Ramsey with Gene and Chris in the Paracast, exploring the case of the Aztec UFO crash, thought for many years to be a possible hoax or a fantasy, but now we're looking into the evidence that Scott Ramsey and Suzanne Ramsey and others have accumulated over many years. Okay, so the question I framed before we broke, Scott, did the Air Force Base, Kirtland Air Force Base, call back the witness and tell him anything?
No, never heard a word. Never heard a word. How about other sightings that may have been reported during that same time period? Of course, we had the dramatic flyover several years later in the Farmington area. Were there any other sightings, let's say, in Blue Book or other sighting logs?
Yeah, leading up to and then, of course, after the March 48 incident in Hart Canyon, and what Chris was referring to was the March 17th Armada flyover of hundreds, as the newspaper reported, of UFOs flew over Farmington, which is just 20 miles west of Aztec. Yeah, we go into some cases in the book. Manuel Sandoval, who is a Cuba, New Mexico police officer, little town of Cuba, about 100 miles southeast of the Four Corners, actually about halfway point between Albuquerque and the Four Corners. He and the highway patrolman by the name of Andy Andrews were seeing flying saucers on Highway 44, the connecting road. Today it's called Highway 550, that connects you from just north of Albuquerque, the town of Bernalillo, then into Cuba, and then on to the Four Corners area. Andy Andrews would come down, not quite to Cuba. His territory would be the Continental Divide. And then Manuel Sandoval would patrol for the town of Cuba from the Continental Divide all the way to about 20 miles south of the town of Cuba. Well, they'd meet in the evening for coffee and pie at a hotel restaurant in Cuba and talk about, recap that night about speeders, about lost people, lost tourists, on and on and on. And the subject started getting more and more toward flying saucers and having incredible sightings, the two of them. So the same night, sometimes possibly the same object. But these were structured craft with portholes, with landing lights, seeming to scan the desert floor and canyons, although, as Manuel said, as though they were looking for something. Now, during the day, Manuel Sandoval also worked security, but not for the town of Cuba, but for the Union Pacific Gas Company, that had the pipeline that came down the backside of Los Alamos all the way down to the pumping station at Libra. So between his day job and talking to other workers and experiencing what he and Andy Andrews saw at night, yes, there were a lot of UFO sightings.
Okay. How and when was the wreckage of this apparent strange craft discovered?
The morning of March 25th, 1948. Oil field worker Doug Nolan was en route that morning to his boss's house, Bill Ferguson. They were employed by El Paso Gas, and they were going to head down south toward Bloomfield, and Bill Ferguson informed them that they were being redirected out to Hart Canyon Road because there was a bad brush fire near or awfully close to a storage area of drip tanks. And when they got out to the drip tanks, it turned out that the fire was up on the mesa. Doug Nolan was en route out to his boss's house, Bill Ferguson, and they had a day planned down near Bloomfield in the Blanco area, checking some compressors. And when he got to Bill Ferguson's house, his boss informed him that now they were going out to Hart Canyon Road, the complete opposite direction, because a brush fire was reported out near their drip tanks, the big storage tanks. And well, when they got out there, it turned out that the brush fire was up on a mesa on top of the drip tank, so it posed no threat. However, oil field workers that got there ahead of them said to Bill Ferguson, the senior guy, you don't have to worry about the brush fire. It's on the eastern end of the mesa, but directly above the oil tanks on the mesa is an object we have no idea what this is. You need to come look at it.
Now, just parenthetically, I want to ask, these remembrances you're giving us, is this something the original witnesses wrote down that you looked at or what?
Doug Nolan perhaps did. Bill Ferguson, I don't know. He was long dead by the time I got onto this story.
So you're getting it from the family members?
No, actually, I got this from Doug Nolan before he died, but I never had timing ran out to talk to Ferguson. I think he died in the early to mid-70s. And Doug was 19 at the time. By the time I interviewed him, he was 83. So young kids back in 48, by the time you get to them in the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, they're getting up there in years.
Now, were there written documents with any of these witnesses you could refer to maybe bring their remembrances more up to date?
Couldn't answer that. Don't know.
Okay.
I did it purely by saying, you know, I let people talk. Just tell me your story. Tell me what you remember. And that's what Doug did. We talked to him before he died, and he had just had a series of strokes. So he was struggling with his speech, but his mind was very sharp.
Okay, so let's continue with the story.
They get up there and up on the mesa, and there's a large, as he put it, lenticular object. Lenticular meaning like almost like a contact lens blown up. Very small cross section. No apparent damage whatsoever. Pewter brushed aluminum type color, not shiny. No rivets, no seams, no bolts, screws, nuts, bolts, anything. He said it looked like it had been molded out of a mold. It was so perfect. And it was laying at about, 15 degree angle, I think is what I took down in my notes from talking to him. In the sandy silt on top of the mesa.
So it crashed into the sand.
It crashed, controlled landing, or whatever you want to use. There was no apparent damage. And everybody we talked to had the same story about it. No apparent damage.
So now that's the point, too. How many of the people that you talked to were direct witnesses like this one?
Okay. Three.
These are people who are saying, this is what I remember, and the stories were fairly consistent.
Yeah.
Okay. So, large craft, how big we're talking about here?
100 feet in diameter.
Okay, it's like a football field.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Football field-sized craft, saucer-shaped. Were there hatches, portholes, anything?
Okay. Yep. They talked about portholes going around the top dome. There was a dome on top and a dome on the bottom of this lenticular wing, the one on top being noticeably larger, it looked like it almost was an extra floor up on top, and a mirrored sunglass type of material that you had to get real close to realize it wasn't part of the craft, and they could look in. Doug described it as the mirrored sunglasses that became popular in the 70s and 80s. And you could look through it, and they found one that was broken, about a half-inch hole. He said about big enough you could put your thumb through it. And Bill Ferguson went and got a fire pole. They had no idea what it was. The last thing they thought of is a flying saucer from parts unknown.
I assume they expected some kind of conventional aircraft they
military.
Weren't familiar with.
Yeah, military. It's exactly what Doug thought. He said, we never thought anything other than, hey, this is one of ours, and we need to get in here and see if we can help somebody. And so Ferguson said, yeah, and they went and got a fire pole and poked around, kind of breaking out the porthole and poking around inside the cabin until Doug says, I don't know what Ferguson hit, but all of a sudden a stairwell dropped down out of the bottom.
It's kind of like the stairwell of perhaps, of course, similar to a walkway of some sort.
I always think about the movie The Day.
I think of Day of the Earth Stood Still, but then it was just like a platform. He walked down that platform. Here we're talking about stairs. So we have the big craft with the stairway. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We have Scott Ramsey with Suzanne Ramsey with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
whether it's personal mail, whether it's business email, you want reliable, dependable delivery, freedom from spam, freedom from viruses. Well, Polaris Mail offers professional email hosting services for your personal or small business use. Each account uses 25 gigabytes of storage, an easy-to-use webmail interface, and full mobile sync. Sign up today for a 30-day free trial at PolarisMail.com, PolarisMail.com. So here's what happened. I was placing an order online. The site went down. It just stopped responding. It took hours before it returned, but I'd already placed the order with another company. If your site goes down, you could lose business. And if you have a business or personal site, you'll want to know it's easy to run and it will stay online. At iWeb, your site is hosted on one of the most reliable networks in the world. Check it out. iWeb.com. That's iWeb.com.
Don't answer it! How can I stop these annoying collection calls?
Imagine being free from your debt without settling. And with no payment plan, no negotiating or filing bankruptcy, and no attorneys. What if you could eliminate the risk from all your unsecured debt in about 90 days? And keep all your money? You can! It's called Zero Debt Guarantee. And it works. There's no other program of its kind on the planet, and we guarantee the results in writing. Call now. 800-477-9256. Let our team of experts provide you with the resources to fight back, stop collection calls, and prevent and stop wage garnishments and bank levies. If you're facing foreclosure, we can help. Don't go it alone. Get free information now by calling 800-477-9256. Talk to an expert who has also completed our program. Call 800-477-9256 for free info or go to ZeroDebtGuarantee.com. That's 800-477-9256 or go to ZeroDebtGuarantee.com.
Iodine protection packs from hempusa.org are now in stock for immediate delivery worldwide. Our iodine protection packs include microplant powder, green life kelp, red palm oil, and our clear roll-on iodine that will feed the body the iodine it needs. All iodine protection packs are in stock. Save you money and ship for free in all 50 states. Visit hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
HempUSA.org has a revolutionary wonder food for detoxing the body and rebuilding the immune system.
Microplant powder can help unclog arteries and soften heart valves while removing heavy metals, virus, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Plus, it cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Keep your body clean with microplant powder. Visit us at HempUSA.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
Hello?
Congratulations.
For what?
For losing all that weight. How'd you do it so fast?
ASAP.
ASAP what? What's that mean?
Are you ready to get as skinny as possible, as soon as possible, as simple as possible, and as sexy as possible?
I'm listening.
Then get with the ASAP program. It's real and it works. No smooth talk, no slick advertising, and no exaggerated claims of success.
I've got to know more.
Welcome to ASAP, as slim as possible. Whether you have 10, 20, or 50 pounds to lose, ASAP is your weight loss answer. ASAP targets the abnormal fat reserves and makes them available to be burned as fuel and contains no caffeine or hormones. Order ASAP at wholesale prices or join the team to share the business with others. Visit GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. Lose weight and look great with ASAP, as slim as possible.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
We have Scott and Suzanne Ramsey, and we're talking about the Aztec incident. The long-awaited book, it's finally available for purchase. A limited print run, so you better hurry. We'll tell you later how to get a copy of the book. And we're dissecting the initial discovery of a strange craft, lenticular in shape, 100 feet in diameter. And they push something inside that opens up stairs. I guess a stairway so they can enter the craft, right?
That's correct. And at that point, Doug said that's when we quickly came to the realization that, well, actually when they viewed in the porthole, they saw two bodies slumped that would look like a control panel. And after the staircase came down and they looked up inside, Doug said it was apparent that these probably weren't military people. They were very small and childlike in size.
Traditional gray-type aliens or what?
No, not gray. He said they're actually burned. The chocolate brown or light brown, from what he said, looked like a mass decompression. The body.
So possibly what might have happened here is there was some kind of hull breach, as we say in Star Trek language.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, so this is a hull breach, and possibly the atmosphere gets in there, and we don't know what kind of hostile impact it has. These people who went there and saw these beings, they couldn't really detect any particular features.
No, he just said it just was apparent that these weren't, you know, tall military guys test flying something. He said it got kind of very strange at that point. Keep in mind, we're, you know, Bill Ferguson, Mr. and Mrs. Knight, that are local ranchers out there, are three, you know, more or less senior people. I think Doug talked about always thinking Bill was really a lot older, and I think he was 25. He was the old guy, you know, 25 years of age.
This is a couple of kids, basically, coming into this wreckage, not understanding what happened, but there's no physical wreckage outside except for the broken porthole.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not like you hear descriptions of Roswell where there was a debris field. This is not a mesa of debris. It's a mesa of virtually intact, because they couldn't see all the underside, but you know what they were looking at was in very good shape.
But inside, the creatures looked like they'd been burned.
Yep.
Okay. So what happened next? What did they do? Did they try to enter the craft?
Some stuck their head up in the stairwell. At this point, we've gone, during all this, a police officer has shown up, and that is who I firmly believe was Manuel Sandoval.
You believe, secondly, but you couldn't confirm.
Oh, I'm convinced. I'm convinced.
How so? How are you convinced?
The story he told people about his encounter with a flying saucer, and you take that encounter that he told and put it together with what Doug Nolan and Ken Farley and other people say about the crash, and all of a sudden, well, this has to be the same one. And I'll tell you some significance. Doug Nolan, when I was first interviewing him, I let people talk. Just tell me what happened that day, Doug, and I'll just sit here and take notes. And he talks about then the second police officer shows up. Now, I'm not even cognizant of comprehending two police officers showing up in 1948 in this remote part of the desert, 11.7 miles from downtown Aztec. And that's the only time I stopped them at that point. I said, Doug, if I was out there today and if I got a cell connection and if I could call 911, I doubt I would get two sheriff department personnel out there today because of the territory. It's, you know, the San Juan County Sheriff's Department is a great group of guys and girls, but they don't have the resources to take and put two police cars out there. And he said, well, one was from the town of Cuba and one was a local police officer that everybody knew. Keep in mind, Doug had just moved to that area from Mancos, Colorado. But he said when the second police officer showed up, it was first name basis with everybody, and you know they all knew him. Now, I've narrowed that down to three or four police officers. It could be another highway patrolman like an Andy Andrews. It could be another San Juan sheriff San Juan Sheriff's Department. It could have been the Aztec constable at the time.
But the witnesses who you talked to, they didn't recall which department?
No. Doug had just moved down there. He said, I probably knew at the time, but at 80-some years old and going through what I've gone through health-wise, I don't recall. Ken Farley didn't live in the area. He was transient going through the area en route to San Diego as a young guy with a buddy. And the only reason they went out Hart Canyon Road is all the commotion. They saw the police car, and He said possibly an ambulance or a fire truck. He said, I don't remember what, but we thought, gee, we're out in the middle of nowhere, and this looks like an emergency. Let's go. We're either going to help or rubberneck. What's going on? Let's follow these guys out.
Okay, once the authorities showed up, what happened to these witnesses? Were they interrogated? What?
Well, the police officers are there. They're talking to each other. Then they come over, and the second local police officer informs the oil field workers that, hey, the military has been called, and you need to get out of here. And, well, you tell that to a bunch of 19-year-old oil field workers or 19-year-old kids in general, and they said, this looks big. We're not leaving. We're sticking around. And they did. And then the military showed up late morning, early afternoon. That part varied a little bit. And, yes, then the oil field workers and Mr. and Mrs. Knight were separated, even the police officers, and they were interrogated. What did you see? And basically, as I address in the book, well, it wasn't really what did you see. It's we're here to tell you you didn't see a thing, and it's about national security.
Which agency did these military officers represent?
Both Doug and Ken, everybody consistently says they had no mention on their uniforms of whether they were Army, Air Force. You know, we had the Air Force then, the newly formed Air Force from the Army Air Corps. They were in generic uniforms as they showed up on the site.
So it's even possible they weren't from the military at all.
They could be from Atomic Energy Commission or, you know, pick your choice.
Okay, so they were questioned separately and told basically, you didn't see anything, don't talk about it.
That's right. Get out of here. And Doug said years would go by, and he'd bring it up to Bill Ferguson in the truck. The two of them would be going out to an oil field or a compressor that was in trouble, and they needed to go out and check on it or fix it. And he'd say to Bill, come on, Bill, where do you think that thing came from? What the heck do you think that thing was? And Ferguson would look at him and say, Doug, we're not supposed to talk about that.
So this was at a time, we have to kind of paint this. You know,
yeah.
Back in the late 40s, early 50s, years following World War II, we believed the government, we believed the authorities, and if the police said, don't talk about it, if the Air Force or whatever military agency was involved said, don't talk about it, we accepted that as something as patriotic Americans. Today we'd say,
right,
and 5 minutes later we'd call up the local cable station and say, hey, guess what happened to me? We have Scott Ramsey, Suzanne Ramsey, talking about Aztec with Gene and Chris in
the Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Ray Perkins, a reclusive veteran burned out from the Gulf War, lives tortured by relentless, perplexing nightmares. Nightmares of a horrific battle in deep space and of a mysterious woman suffering in agony for her devastated world. A woman not yet born, calling across centuries to him. Then, a coincidence leads him to his destiny, his chance to alter the universe. Attack of the Rockoids. The former fiction editor for Star Wars and Indiana Jones, Robert Simpson, writes, "The soul of the novel Attack of the Rockoids lies in its heart and passion for building a convincing tale of a love that spans a galaxy. A thrilling story. Attack of the Rockoids is available now. Read a sample chapter and get a special discount off of the cover price at our website, rockoids.com. That's rockoids.com. Attack of the Rockoids. A novel in the grand science fiction tradition.
Love gardening but don't love seeing your hard work destroyed by wildlife? Then use the number one most effective deer and rabbit repellent you can buy, PlantSkid. PlantSkid repellent protects gardens, trees, and landscaping by emitting an odor that browsing animals associate with predators. So animals avoid plants before they nibble, not after. PlantSkid is made in the U.S. from non-toxic, 100% organic, environment, and pet-friendly ingredients. Other repellents wash off in the rain. Not PlantSkid. It's guaranteed to outlast all other repellents. Plant Skid was the first animal repellent to be OMRI listed organic and now comes in liquid spray, powder concentrate, or easy-to-use granular. Just sprinkle around your garden. For proven protection from deer, rabbits, squirrels, and other small rodents, use Plant Skid. Member tested and recommended by the National Home Gardening Club. Find a dealer near you at PlantSkid.com. That's PlantSkyd.com. Ask about our new vole repellent when you call 800-252-6051. That's 800-252-6051. Plant Skid. Proven plant protection guaranteed or your money back.
If you owe money to the IRS, you can't make the problem go away by yourself. But with the help of Dan Pilla, you can get your problem solved once and for all.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. For 30 years, I've helped thousands of people solve their tax debt problem, and I can help you solve yours too. We take a very simple but proven three-step approach to solving your problem. First, we stabilize IRS collection actions so you don't have to worry about the IRS seizing your bank account or paycheck. Next, we build a comprehensive plan to get your tax debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even completely eliminated. And finally, we work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. Call us for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829. We'll work together to get your problem solved, guaranteed.
Dan Pilla has been protecting taxpayers from the IRS for three decades, and he can help you too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
And now another CentOS Game Changer with sports broadcaster Aaron Andrews.
I'm here at a manufacturing firm in Chapel Hill. With me is Bob, the GM. Bob, your company ships product nationwide. But talk about the home office's new game plan.
Well, we had 10 years of old paperwork piled up here. It was a mess, a security risk, and my dog used to bury bones in the piles. We needed a game changer.
And now I see CentOS trucks shredding all those files. They're known for uniforms. Tell me about their shredding playbook.
They're the best. They have trucks across the country shredding tons of documents every day, and every scrap of paper gets recycled.
That sounds like a winning move. With CentOS trucks here weekly, they're happy they won't spend hours shredding documents themselves. Let's go to the booth.
Document shredding is just one of the many expert services CentOS can tackle for your business. Don't waste time or take risks with confidential papers. Call CentOS at 1-800-CINTAS-6 or visit CentOS.com/radio and tell them to bring in the team with the white truck.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
So we're speaking of a time when regular people believe the authorities. When they said, shut up. They shut up. With Scott and Suzanne Ramsey, we're looking at the Aztec case. We're continuing with what happened at Heart Canyon. Now, after the authorities said, shut up, did all these people you talked to just disperse, go home, what?
Yeah, pretty much. They'd spent a greater part of the day out there. You know, it was afternoon by the time it was all was said and done. And everybody went their own way. And Doug said he talked to very, very few people about this, his wife. He really wanted it on the record. He contacted Steinman after Steinman's book was out. And I called Bill in early 90s. And he really didn't want any part of the Aztec story. He was pretty much burned out. He thinks to this day he lost his job over finishing the book when his employer told him not to.
His employer told him not to? Why?
Well, he worked for an aerospace company, and they didn't think that would be smart for a quality control engineer to be writing a book about flying saucers that crashed in Heart Canyon. So he lost his job shortly after that. He couldn't get a job in the aerospace business. He felt that he was blackballed. Which some of that conspiracy I have to go along with. I mean, he never did get a job back in the aerospace business. He's a brilliant guy. He's a great guy if you've ever met him. I contacted him, and he was very, very nice, but very short with me, and just said, look, go get your feet wet. When you're really serious, when I think you're serious, then I'll talk to you, but I don't think you've been doing this long enough, and I think I've been doing it 6 years. And so I waited a few years and called him back, and he said, you still at this? And I said, yeah. And he said, where are you at? And I told him how much research we had done, and where we were. And so he said, well, here, then let me, you're serious, let me give you a couple of leads. And if these people are still alive, great. If not, you know, I did the best I could.
So that was the litmus test. This is the Bill Steinman litmus test that you have to be involved in this thing for 10 years or so before he will even talk to you.
Yeah, which is about how long he put into it. Right. So, as a matter of fact, Bill may be listening to this show when it airs, but I will, he'll have a book in his hand, by the way. I did not call him last week and tell him the book was done. I just want a book to show up and kind of surprise him. But he was an enormous help in saying, you know, here's some leads, and I know what he feels like. We're, you know, our book's out, and we already have two very good, solid leads that need to be followed up. And some of the leads he gave us were very good. And Randy Barnes, a resident of Aztec, came up with Ken Farley. And Ken was a good witness. He wasn't from the area. He didn't pal around with these guys in Aztec where they could have concocted a story. And we talked to Ken, and Ken brought up being at the crash site and two police officers.
Now, that's the interesting thing here. After all these years, because they were admonished not to say anything, they said nothing, even though they may have been contacted through the years. Basically, none of the story about Aztec leaked out, I guess, until Steinman got involved after the initial flurry with Frank Scully.
Yes, that's true.
Now, you have a chapter 7, and I wanted to break into this and ask you a question why we say that. Birds of a feather flock together, and the way it's spelled is, of course, it's Carl Flock, who's kind of was a skeptical gentleman. He was co-author of Jim Moseley's book, Shockingly Close to the Truth.
Right.
Flock didn't believe in Aztec. Why? What's his objection? Or what was his objection?
I'm going to answer that question with a statement first. By the way, Carl and I agreed on a lot of things in life, politics, sports. Carl and I became good friends. It was like having two friends that could not agree on politics when it came to Aztec.
Sounds like me and my wife.
Okay, there you go. And people sometimes think Carl and I were at each other's throat only when we were talking Aztec. His whole theory was, and for your listeners that don't know, Carl had an incredible background, a military career, working for different agencies within the government, including the CIA, and was a very, very bright and talented guy. But his whole thing about Aztec was Silas Newton and Leo Gebauer were dragged in on a confidence charges. Therefore, the entire credibility of the case goes out the window. And I could never get Carl beyond that.
Even if you said, look at all these witnesses?
No. Oh, no.
He wouldn't look at the witnesses because these two people were suspect.
That's correct. Exactly. And you've got to keep in mind, he's not a big fan of Roswell either. Carl was a big fan of a few selected cases. Barney and Betty Hill, you know, that was one that he looked into and felt comfortable with. But, you know, I had a lot of problems with Carl, and I used to talk to him about it and say, Carl, you live in Bernalillo. You are 2 hours and 15 minutes from your house to the crash site, landing site, whatever we want to call it. I live in North Carolina, just north of Charlotte, 1,836 miles from my driveway to the crash site. He had badmouthed Aztec for years, and the only time he went to the crash site is when I put him in my rental car and took him to the crash site. And I said, how can you possibly write negative things about the Aztec crash? You've never been to the site. You've never looked around at the physical evidence. You've never walked up and down Main Street and talked to anybody. That would be like a homicide detective never leaving his house and solving a murder case. I said, come on, Carl, you know, you do your research. If you don't like it after that, then that's fine. But don't, to quote Stan Friedman, don't armchair it. Don't sit in your armchair and try to solve this thing.
Speaking of which, Kevin Randall hasn't bought Aztec.
Has he
read this book?
He's reading it now, and I don't think he'll buy it after he reads it.
Okay.
You'll have to ask.
We will.
He sent me an email over the weekend. It wasn't going in a positive direction.
Okay.
And there's a lot of people in the field of ufology that have never accepted Aztec. And, you know, if you've noticed, Suzanne and I, and not for any negative reason, but we don't subscribe to the field of ufology. We look at this as purely a research project and a research case. It's tainted in the field of ufology, if there is such a thing, by the way, of the field of ufology. But, so we have to look at it from fresh eyes, look at the fresh evidence, and not be part of the band that says, I want to be part of Aztec, or I don't want to be part of Aztec. Apparently, the popular thing is not to be part of it.
Okay, so you are basically going up against conventional wisdom here.
I think that would wrap it up.
And I get the impression that some of our listeners, based on the questions they posed, and we've asked some of them already, we'll have more to pose as we progress from the questions in our forums at forum.theparacast.com. I gather people are trying to be fair about it, but there's a general tendency to be skeptical of Aztec, even if they were to accept Roswell. And Aztec has kind of played the second fiddle to Roswell.
Oh,
and why
absolutely.
Is that?
Well, you know, you look at the beginning of Roswell, look at the events happening. All of a sudden, it's on the front page of many newspapers around the country. Army recovers flying disc, or whatever the exact quote was. And now, 8 months later, we have the Aztec incident. It doesn't make the cover of a newspaper. Was the military a lot better? Did they learn from their mistake of putting out a press release back in 1947? I don't know. I think when I talk to people of, you feel strong about the Roswell incident, why not Aztec? Well, I think it's, the story broke, it hit the wire service, the military put out a press release saying we finally captured one of these damn things, we got it in our possession.
The theory being is that there should have been some publicity beyond the Scully book early on. We have Scott and Suzanne Ramsey with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code Night Owl. Use the coupon code Night Owl to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
For a long time, you've heard me talk about building your own food supply with eFoods Direct. As a listener, you know why you need to have a supply of the best storable food on the planet. Every day, we document the attempts to take control of our lives. But there's one thing we can all control, your greatest dependency, food. eFoods Direct products are made with only the best ingredients and none of the trash and contaminants like trans fats, GMOs, or MSG. This food is nutrient dense and tastes great. It's simple to make, portable, and has a shelf life of up to 25 years. Now with eFoods Direct, you'll get the most affordable, best tasting food you can buy. And the new products and pricing will blow you away. Compared to other food sources, including home cooked meals, you can cut your food cost in half. You just can't afford to ignore this. Call 800-409-5633. Or go to eFoodsDirect.com/Alex for specials. Don't let this offer pass you by. Call 800-409-5633 or eFoodsDirect.com/Alex. More the best or less guarantee.
Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. That bears repeating. Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. And Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse is the key to digestive health. Pro-EM-1 is a powerful liquid probiotic, strong enough to cleanse, gentle enough to use every day. Pro EM1 is dairy, wheat, and soy free. Contains all natural and certified organic ingredients. Contains no preservatives or animal products. Supports a healthy digestive and immune system. Supports weight loss. Improves absorption of food nutrients. Aids in controlling yeast infections. Is never freeze-dried. And uses three groups of live, viable, beneficial microbes to cleanse and remove toxins. Order Pro EM1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse at Terraganics.com. Spelled TerraGanix.com. TerraGanix.com. Or call toll-free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Pro EM1, the raw probiotic.
Attention, mindless criminals, thugs, and thieves. Go ahead, break a leg. American homeowners are fed up with your door kick-ins and forced entries. We now dare you to try your boot against any door reinforced with the Door Sentinel. The Door Sentinel pack includes a steel door jam plate with 3.5-inch screws, a lock shield, and hinge shields. The Door Sentinel installs in minutes, securing any front, side, or back doors, even French doors. Criminals, be forewarned, your leg will break before the Door Sentinel will budge. Even if you have an alarm system, back it up with the Door Sentinel. Basic products starting under $20. Order your Door Sentinel today for your home, garage, or any building you own or rent at MySafeDoor.com. That's MySafeDoor.com or call 678-648-6757. That's 678-648-6757. Get your peace of mind back with Door Sentinel. The Door Sentinel. Always on guard.
This is Jacques Vallée, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
We have Scott and Suzanne Ramsey. Suzanne kind of taking over the call for a few moments as we continue with our exploration with Gene and Chris into the Aztec incident in 1948. Now, you having grown up in that area, Suzanne, what was your take on this? Had you heard anything about it before you met Scott and began this journey?
Actually, I was originally from Chicago, moved to South Dakota, and then from there had lived several places, and my parents were going to move to a warmer climate from South Dakota.
I can see that.
Yes, oh yeah. And my mother, I remember I must have been, I'm going to guess about the age of eight, I remember her reading Scully's book. Now, I think the book was like 16 years old by that time, but I remember her reading the book and talking about around the dinner table. And you have to keep in mind that that was not an era where you spoke about things like that a lot. They just weren't as common as and everyday as they are today. And so that's kind of where the topic came up. And then after she finished reading the book, you know, there were other things to go on to. And years later, when they decided to move, they gave me a call. I was living elsewhere and said, hey, could you help us move down? And we're looking for some place in the Southwest where it's warmer. And as they looked at different locations, the one that kept coming up in their mind was, my mom said, I was so fascinated by the book I read years ago about the Aztec, you know, incident. She said, I really would be interested in living in that area and just, you know, getting to know more about it. Well, of course, there were a lot of things to consider, and they did eventually end up moving there and enjoyed their life very much. But one of the disappointments was that nobody talked about it. It was as if it never happened.
I mean, could you physically go to some place, or did you, and say, hey, do you have any information about this alleged UFO crash years ago?
Nothing at all.
Did you ask?
And I know she did.
Okay.
I know for a fact
she did. Okay.
And there was just nothing spoken about it at all. And then what started to happen was there was what kind of brought this back up again, I guess, the topic was in several books, as Scott has discussed with you, but also the fact that Leanne Hathcock, she was the director of the library in town, wanted to do some type of a fundraiser that would be unique. And
was this the public library you're talking about here?
Yes,
okay,
in Aztec.
Sure.
Yeah. And they needed to do a fundraiser to build the building. Well, it's funny how it kicked something off that had not really had much attention called to it. And over the years, doing this symposium and bringing speakers in and having it to celebrate this particular event has, you know, had pluses and minuses to it. A lot of people are really excited about it and fascinated by it from all over the world. as well as people in the area that are not so inclined to. I think that the concerns that the people that were on site had, of course, as you discussed with Scott, were that, you know, there were military had mentioned to the folks, actually more than mentioned, but persuaded them not to discuss this. And, you know, there's a lot of pressure. And this was a different era. When the military said something, you did it. And they were concerned about the well-being of their family and their friends. So it put a squelch on everything, as if it didn't happen. And years later, I was talking to a woman who was a journalist, and I said, I know that you have some information on this. And I said, I've done my own research, and at that time Scott and I were married, and I said, but Scott's been doing research, but I know you have some information because you started to write about this. And the woman said to me on the phone, she said, and she was a mature age lady and quite an elegant lady. Her statement was, no good can come from this. I spent time on this. No good can come from this. And I said, well, and she said, you need to just stop this right now, Suzanne. And I said, I understand your concerns. I appreciate you, you know, sharing that. And we'll proceed with caution. But, you know, this is what we're doing. And she was very disappointed to hear that.
Now, this is also interesting here, too. All these years, nobody even whispered anything before, say, Bill Steinman started investigating and you and Scott started investigating. Nobody said a thing. There were no military authorities coming to check things over, no men in black, nothing. Nothing happened.
I really think that the pressure that the witnesses were put under had everything to do with that. Again, keep in mind, this was in 1948. There were very few phones, not a lot of communication. I mean, it's a desolate area, not the city of Aztec itself, but out where the crash happened. There, but it's still, it's a pretty remote area. Chris,
yeah,
have you ever been down?
Still today, it's remote. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
have you been there, Chris?
Remote.
Yeah,
well,
it is.
I spoke at your conference in 2008.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I'm sorry. You're right. That's right. So it is. It's pretty isolated out there. It's beautiful. But it's, you know, and you think back to, you know, 1948, in the book, in the back of the book, just for fun, we put some pictures of kind of what Aztec was like, not specifically in that era, but, you know, random pictures of what it was like. And it being in the West, it's more isolated, too. You know, we live in the East now, and, you know, on the East Coast, and there's more population. It's more densely populated. Out there, it wasn't. And so I think if...
Cowboys and Indians.
It was, you know, honestly, I have a picture of downtown Main Street at one point. It's one of my favorite pictures of all time. It's a picture of them herding buffalo down Main Street in Aztec.
Oh, it sounds like a Western movie. Listen, let's move into the crash site. Okay, so they leave the crash site, and obviously at some point in time, it's no longer there. So if you check the site, as you have done, as Bill Steinman has done, as people have done, what do you find there now?
Currently? You mean today?
When you started investigating this particular case, what did you see at the site?
Well, it's, again, it's a desolate area. It's a mesa. And for those of you that aren't familiar with a mesa, the term mesa means it's like a hill, but it's got some cliffs and bluffs around it, and it's pretty high up so that you can see into Colorado, see some of the Colorado Mountains. It's a dusty road, and at that time there was a dusty road leading up to it, and that's about all you could see. In time, we were able to, Randy Barnes went in What did he use to get rid of the silt? That's right. He poked with a stick or a rod into the sand to find the cement slab. And I had to step away for a moment, and I don't know if Scott discussed the cement slab. Did he have a chance to describe that to you?
We haven't gotten to the point talking about what's left. So the key is what's left, and has anyone taken any readings or samples, soil samples, whatever, to see if there's anything unusual?
Well, the readings, there have been readings that have been done, and there have been things that have been found, some military little nicks and knacks, you know, things from MREs or whatever out there, but that could be explained, honestly, from hunters or anything else. But the cement slab that is there,
Yeah, that's the most enigmatic feature.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
I said that's the most enigmatic feature that's there, is this meth lab. There's no reason for it to be there.
There is absolutely no reason. And
describe this cement slab. Let's talk about that, what it looks like.
Okay. It's the cement slab is about, I think that is what it is, 1 meter square. And what we've done is had some tests done on it to see, you know, if, just get gather information on it itself. And we've gotten to a point, but it's very, very expensive to have an analysis done. What we do know so far is that the rebar in this slab is from that area of time, around 1948. Now, when they make rebar, and it is from, and the sand that the cement was made from was from the area of Aztec. So, what that tells you, you think, well, isn't that common, or how does that help? Rebar is made, and they usually keep it within a couple year period, so you can isolate it to a point. But it's still there. A lot of people have chipped pieces off of it and had souvenirs taken and things, which is disappointing. But you know, I guess it's that you want a piece of the action or something.
So this is something that would have to be built, or was it there naturally?
The cement slab?
Is this something?
No, it's obviously cement and rebar.
Okay, so I am not somebody who does construction. I want this to be explained. So, okay, so we have this cement slab that's left there. It's a remnant, and we have to figure out why it would be there, what purpose it's used for, and how this may connect with the possible recovery of a flying saucer. Lots of stuff to go here with Scott and Suzanne Ramsey. And the book is called The Aztec Incident, Recovery at Heart Canyon. And if you go to theaztecincident.com, you can check out a sample chapter of the book and maybe order a copy. With Scott and Suzanne Ramsey and Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hi, Ted Anderson announcing a great way to listen to radio on the telephone. By calling 760-569-7700, you'll be hearing GCNLive.com programs in seconds. Come to GCNLive.com, find your favorite host's dedicated phone number, and hear them 24/7. You heard me right, every show has a dedicated phone number. Stop by GCNLive.com and bookmark their number today. And again, that's 760-569-7700. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.